Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast. I'm your Casual Comics host, Joe, and I'm here with my good Marvel buddy, Mark. How are you doing today, Mark?
Great. Greetings, Joe.
Awesome. We saw Ant-Man and the Wasp finally. Quantumania. So we're going to have an ant-sized ant cast today to follow up on our preview.
No antagonists in this podcast. Okay.
Don't get antsy. You're getting ahead of us. Nice. We're not a pun-based podcast. So.
No, we're not.
But today will be fun. We'll talk about our thoughts on Ant-Man. And we also read some recent Ant-Man comics from Marvel. And I'll get your thoughts on those. But before we dive into the show proper, I've got just a couple news and notes from the Marvel Universe. Last time we talked about the election going on.
We did.
The X-Men. Who was it you were going to vote for?
I forgot.
I was
going to have it in my notes. But
I was going to vote for Dazzler.
Oh, I think that was who I voted for, too. The listeners, our loyal listeners will know, Joe.
All right. I'll ask them in a poll who did Marvel. Let's go. But interesting this year, and I think it's because of the state of the X-Men universe, which we'll get to in a minute, the election's taking on a more negative tone than it ever has in the past, and the characters are running attack ads on each other. It's like...
What?
Attack
ads. Mudslinging in the MCU?
Right, of the characters who are up for inclusion in the upcoming X-Men. I think it's Juggernaut, Jubilee, Dazzler, Cannonball, somebody I don't know, somebody else I don't know. Like there's some other characters.
I think I voted for Juggernaut when you put that that way. And then you voted for Dazzler.
I did vote for Dazzler. But this year, for the first time, like I said, it's getting a little negative. And there's tweets from Marvel Entertainment using the hashtag X-Men vote. Where like, I love this one. How much nepotism can Krakoa's government handle with Juggernaut on the team?
That's right.
Is a washed up disco star like Dazzler really who you want defending your island? Like this is getting
nasty. That's brutal stuff.
How can Cannonball claim to be a citizen of Krakoa when he spends most of his time in Shi'ar space?
That's very deep.
It's actually not as negative as the last elections we had here in the United States, but still it's a different tone in that I think the last X-Men comic we read was House of X, Powers of X, right? Mm-hmm. And the mutants have their own island nation of Krakoa that they govern themselves. They're a separate entity that the world obviously always feels threatened by. But there's something going on, and I would love to chat with you in a future podcast. And the new event is called The Sins of Sinister, where remember, all of the villains were granted amnesty if they were mutants to come to the island. And Mr. Sinister was actually on the Quiet Council, one of the three main governing bodies of Krakoa, and I think he staged a coup.
Shocker. Let's grant amnesty to a bunch of supervillains. What could go wrong?
I mean, his name, it's right there. It's Mr. Sinister. If you want to...
That's right.
That's like if he were running for any government office, that's a way that you would take a negative attack. Oh, you really want Mr. Sinister? Mr.
Sinister on the council?
But
give us a different point of view.
It seems like things aren't going so hot on Krakoa and their government might be falling apart. And the mutants aren't one big love fest like they were back in the days of the immortal X-Men. They keep putting out 12-issue series with different titles. I don't know if you know, the X-Men are now literally immortal. All of the mutants are.
I didn't know that.
They have created clone duplicate bodies of themselves using like 5 different mutants. They can create clone mutant bodies of everybody. And they keep using Professor X's telepathic powers. They like keep copies of people's minds. So if they die, they just reanimate your clone body, download it with your last brainwave download, and bam, you're right back.
So it's not ant telepathy.
Not quite. So they still haven't announced the results of the elections, but I'm looking forward to that. And the only other big piece of news is, you know, I've been reading a lot more Fantastic Four lately. I didn't realize Fantastic Four number 700 is coming out in May.
That's a pretty big event.
And the cover looks pretty cool because they have a wraparound cover where I don't remember who the artist is. They've drawn 700 different characters from the Fantastic Four comics histories all on one cover. So I'm super excited about that.
Okay, that's, I'm gonna have to go pick that up. I probably will be hard to find, but that'd be cool. Maybe like a third printing or something.
Yeah. Well, it's not out yet, so you could probably still get a first one reserved at your local comic shop today.
Yes.
Which good idea. Which local comic shop do you shop at when you're here in Omaha?
It's usually I usually go to Krypton, but since they moved, probably Dragon's Lair in Bellevue is probably where I go. What about you?
I kind of rotate. I used to always go to Legend Comics and Coffee. It's one of my favorites. I love it. I still love it. It's just in a different location. They got moved, and they don't have the coffee shop anymore. I've heard from their Facebook they're still going to try and reopen in a new location with the coffee shop. That's probably where I'll hang out most of the time. But where I am now, I'm very close to both Krypton and Dragon's Lair, and it kind of depends what I'm looking for. If I'm looking more for back issues, Krypton. If I just want to run in and grab a couple new comics, usually Dragon's Lair. West.
The lair. What? So is Legend open? Just don't know if they don't have coffee.
Yeah. So where they were at before, where it used to be, that whole strip mall got closed. They sold it, knocked it down, put a drugstore there. And apparently they only gave the tenants like 90 days notice to move out. So they couldn't find another location. They could put in both a comic and coffee shop. They're over on about 39th and Farnham somewhere in there now.
Oh, so not far from Spielbound.
Not too far, but it's a much smaller place. You can tell they had to cram a store like that was four times as big into a much smaller space. But I'm looking forward to when they get reopened. But that's all there wasn't a ton of comic news this week. And I know Ant-Man was quite the thrill ride. So let's take a quick break and we'll come back and start with our recap of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
You're listening to your friendly neighborhood casual comics cast.
All right, welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast, everybody. It's me and Mark here today talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. Spoilers ahead, obviously. You know, it's been a week, so hopefully everybody who really wanted to see it has gotten to see it by now. We talked about leading into this being the introduction of real proper introduction of Kang and MODOK. But let's rewind to the beginning of the movie. The movie starts, you know, this is the third movie in the Ant-Man series. It kind of flows out from where is this is after Endgame. I'm not sure how it lines up chronology wise. It seems like it's a few years after the snap. What about five years later?
I think it's a few I don't know 5 years after the snap, but probably 2 to 3. I think less than five if I had to guess. Okay. Do you know what little trivia, do you know what MCU movie number this is, Joe? Can you guess?
Is it 23?
31.
31? Holy cow.
I know.
That's a lot.
I didn't believe it either. I was like, what? The 31st movie since Iron Man.
If you watched a marathon that ran back to back to back, you're talking three solid days of movies.
Yes. Yeah. Almost as long as Interstellar.
But it feels shorter.
But it feels shorter, yeah. But yeah, 31st movie. So I thought that's an interesting tidbit.
See, I said 23 because I was like, I think it's a prime number. It was a prime number.
You're right. It was a prime number.
Had the wrong one, though.
That's right. So a few years after the snap.
A few years after this.
The blip.
After the blip, right?
Yep.
And I like the way that they acknowledge that sometimes, right? So in the opening and the setup, you're looking at present day. You got Scott Lang, successful memoirist now. I like it. Look out for the little guy. Book. You know, that's actually a real book you can buy.
Look out for the little guy?
Yeah.
Written by who?
By Scott Lang.
No,
I saw a promo for it on YouTube, and it's Paul Rudd introducing. He's like, I know it seems weird because I'm Paul Rudd the actor, but this book is a real book and it's available if you want to read it.
What?
I haven't looked it up, but there's a promo on YouTube of Paul Rudd saying, go buy this book published. It's like, it's the fake book from the real movie.
So that's how it opens.
All based off of his time as Ant-Man. It's got some interesting anecdotes in it.
Yep.
And we get to hear the book on tape, which I enjoy too. But, you know, now he's married. I think, maybe not married, but living with Hope. Cassie's a teenager now, and she's like in jail. It's like, oh, come on, Cassie.
Yep.
What are you doing? But you find out she's there, and for blip related reasons, is the police were kicking out people who were homeless from the park, and they're like homeless because the government still has not figured out how to deal with the fallout of the blip, which displaced people for 5 years. They've now mentioned that kind of thing in Falcon and Winter Soldier, where people who are gone are having problems with, you know, they didn't pay bills for 5 years.
Finances, gone. And they were, you get rid of housing for 3 billion people, it's going to, for 5 years, it's going to disrupt things.
Yeah, big time.
That's right.
But yep. Scott is still employee of the century. Baskin Robbins.
That was funny. That was pretty good. They brought him back.
I like that. And so from there, you know, Cassie gets sprung, family dinner at with the Pims, which is always entertaining. Janet's there. Great. It's not the first time Cassie's been in jail. Scott's realizing he's been out of the loop with his daughter for a while now. And she has, though, followed in Hank's footsteps. And during the blip, did a lot of research into the quantum realm and has created a beacon into the quantum realm.
That's right. A way to basically explore the quantum realm without visiting it. That was what she did. And unbeknownst to Scott, unbeknownst to her dad, Hank Pym was helping her. Unbeknownst
to Hank and Janet.
Unbeknownst to Hank and Hope. That's right. Not Janet. Because they thought both of them would freak out, and Janet never wanted to talk about it. She never wanted to talk about her experience, and so they just were like, it must have been super traumatizing. So they surmised, then we won't bring her into this because it'll just upset her to tell her that we're researching the quantum realm.
Right.
And it turns out there was a more sinister reason.
Yeah. And so with that, as was obvious to anybody who saw the trailers or who's ever seen a movie before, when you've made an unauthorized sly device to reach into something like the quantum realm, things are going to go bad quickly. And that's the setup. That's the inciting incident. They turn on the beacon and they're beaming a signal down, which means somebody can track that signal back up. And apparently someone's been waiting around for a long time for that signal to come through.
Right.
But that person will not be named for an annoyingly long period of time in the movie.
That's amen to that, Joe. And it was just like a throw in. And I'm like, I kind of wanted to know that.
Right.
Which is going to be a theme throughout this movie.
Yes. So then entering the quantum realm, they get sucked in. That's how it goes. And they keep shrinking.
Along with some of the ants that were in the ant farm in the little lab in the basement.
The lab equipment. And as they were getting sucked down into the quantum realm, it seems like some people were getting sucked down. Hope sprouts her wasp wings and flies trying to rescue her mom. Scott goes after his daughter.
Yep.
That whole sequence was kind of trippy because the laboratory equipment's going through. At one point, Scott's smaller than the TV. And I'm like, I was having trouble orienting to who was tiny because they were shrinking. Like it was really cool, but it was like really trippy that like everything was changing size seemingly at random. Like the ants were big, the ants were small. The TV was big. Scott was small. And Scott grew really big. I would love at some point to understand the physics of the quantum realm. As you're shrinking, going into the quantum realm, and then you try to grow bigger the same time you're shrinking, there's got to be some relative physics stuff going on there.
Well, and that's what you were saying is like what there's that, but I think what also I would add is so something was shrinking them.
Right.
In this case, like that's different than before, which is you were like an Endgame, they made those suits and they had PIM particles to shrink them.
Right.
So that's a like plot hole one of several for me. I'm like, so somebody had technology to shrink them or just to pull them into the quantum realm?
I think.
And they didn't have PIM particles because I don't think they did.
No, it seems like it created some kind of tunnel into the quantum realm. And yes. By going through the tunnel, you were shrinking. I don't remember from the first Ant-Man movie where they have that car that is like that Hank travels in, like a little interdimensional ship that gets smaller and smaller and smaller. I don't know if that was shrinking because of PIM particles or because they had created a tunnel to the quantum realm that would shrink them as they went. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's more.
Where's my no tunnel. Prize? Do you remember Marvel No Prizes?
No.
Oh, that was like if you found an error in a comic book, you used to be able to write into Marvel. Like people would write in the letters columns. They'd be like, I noticed this mistake. And then they'd make up an explanation for why it wasn't a mistake, that it really happened. And they'd be like, congratulations, your no prize is in the mail.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, that was a classic Marvel. The Marvel. I always wanted to get a no prize. And I never got one.
But you never. There was no prize.
I know. I actually think you would get a letter from them saying, here's your no prize.
Oh, I see. So you actually got something. I'm like, okay. I thought you were just doing like a quantum entanglement with me.
That would be cool. In fact, there's variant covers this month, I think, on Marvel Comics, where the variant cover for Hulk is a letter that says no prize on it. But
so sucked into the quantum realm. There they are. They're all in there. Except the ants aren't with them for some reason.
Because they all landed in different places. Like, I don't know where the TV landed or where the blackboard landed, but they landed in two different places because Hank and Janet were going one way. And that's where Hope did shrink down herself, then flew in to activate her wings. Scott went in with Cassie, and then they land in two different places, which is awesome for storytelling because now you can cut back and forth. You got an A story and a B story.
Yep.
Which one's the A story? I think the A story is Hank and Janet. I think so. That's when moving the plot more forward.
I would agree with you. I think, I don't know. I mean, didn't they meet the...
They did.
No, they both met the resistance fighters, I would call it.
Right. So
yeah, I think Hank and Janet, you're right. They were the A story because she knew what to do, who to try to find, how right. to get to, yeah.
And she's on a mission to meet Bill Murray, aka right. Lord Krylar. Lord Krylar doesn't last long in the MCU, but
no,
he didn't last long in comics either. He only ever appeared in one comic book issue. So,
yep, that's a very Bill Murray thing to do. Like literally have like a 5-minute scene.
Right. They show up. They're looking for Krylar. That was all giving me like real Star Wars vibes too.
Yes.
And
I agree.
Drink the ooze. And Hank's looking for shots. They all just take a shot. Now they can all speak the alien language and understand the alien language. That's great. Little plot device there. Yep. Bill Murray turns out to be a giant a-hole who you could have figured through that casting. That's yes. what he's going to do. Him and Janet have some history. There's a little funny business there.
Right. I was gone for 30 years. What do you expect?
Oh, human. That's what you call yourself. You're not a human. Well, I am in the ways that matter.
That's right. He's so great. I wouldn't mind just like a 20-minute like table monologue with them.
Right. Oh, some really freaky stuff.
That's right.
Him and Hope. And him and Janet in the quantum realm together. I like it because if you think of the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne in the comics, she was always like making goo-goo eyes at dudes. It's like whether it's Magneto and his blue eyes or whatever, she always had to have a dude. Then you get the B story, which is Scott and Cassie. They find the rebels. And this is the section of the story where both stories are moving along. Here's the rebels. Here's Janet, Hope, and Hank. And one group is talking to Krylar because they need to find something with the resistance. The other group has been picked up by the resistance, and they all know something's gone wrong, and they all keep talking about him and that guy and the whatever. They're like, obviously it became irritating to me that they were going out of their way to not say Kang. Like, just say it.
Yes. She was, that was what I had a problem with, not understanding the stakes. It was like, I think they were trying to create a sense of dread on how powerful and evil he is. And because whenever Janet would talk about him, she was terrified.
Right.
She was shaking. She was like, I don't want to speak about it. Like, that was the root of all of her fear.
Right.
It's like, why? Like, you're not telling me, you're just acting.
But other than Janet, who's a character we barely know at all, nobody else gave me any reason to think that whoever it is really not scary. It's not like it's Thor standing there freaking out, or like the big bad moment when you realize how badass like Thanos was, is when Hulk crashed to Earth and Banner is like literally scared to death that Thanos is coming. You're like, oh crap, if the Hulk is scared of this dude, we have no chance. But like,
well, Janet, how about, I agree with that, but how about leading up to that, he kills Loki.
Right.
Like, that's when you know the stakes are high.
Right.
Here is the villain of the last big Avengers movie getting killed by another badass.
Yeah.
And but
you want to tell me
up on Banner and throwing him, well, then him bifrosting to Earth. But you're right. That's when you know the stakes are high.
Right. You want to tell me Janet, who's a character we barely know, appears to be a badass, but is like terrified of this guy. I'm like, I don't have any calibration for how scary that person should be then.
Right. So. Exactly. Yes. But we digress.
We digress.
Or and, we egress.
But you get there, and the big reveal too then is who. So before you even meet Kang, though, you finally get to MODOK.
You get to meet the Destroyer, the
Destroyer.
Mechanized organism designed only for killing.
I like.
And wouldn't it be MODOK?
MODOK?
No, MODOK.
I mean MODOK. So that's where, in the middle of the movie, you don't even still get a lot of stuff with Kang. But you get MODOK, who everybody's deathly afraid of. And he shows up and he attacks the rebel base where Scott and Cassie are. I let me go back to, what did you think of the rebels, though? Those characters?
Again, I just... I mean, it looked oddly... It just was a little disorienting that... I wonder if they had to figure out how many humanoid characters needed to be there before we disbelieved. And I would have preferred that there were zero humans.
Yeah.
Because it was a little disorienting to have humans and them act like they don't even know who humans are.
Right.
It just seemed a little weird. Like I would have been fine with all the, like the character with the, cannon for the face, like the whatever that was
cool.
That was cool. The funny little guy with the no holes.
Dude, you're drinking me right now.
You're drinking me right now. Wow. I just thought they threw in too many humans to make it more believable. I'm like, no, actually, I would have preferred that the only humans were maybe Bill Murray and the Van Dynes and Cassie and Scott.
You're right. That does get a little out of place. And I see that they played a lot of it for laughs, especially with the telepath guy.
Right.
I like him as an actor. He's good, but yes.
He's in a little, good place.
Yeah. A little out of place. But yeah. So I do, now that we're thinking through it, I do think the A story is the Hope and Janet and Hank thing, because they're the ones driving the action forward. And Scott's sort of just
trying to. And part of that, sorry to interrupt, Joe, but that thread is when you get the cutscene to her and her first interaction with Kang. That's why it's the A story, I think.
Yep. And then so you finally get the big reveal of Kang and why Janet wants nothing to do with the quantum realm. It's finally what I was calling the lost syndrome, where like the entire time they're like, you need to tell us what's going on. She's like, I don't have time to tell you what's going on. No, you need to. And like, it would have, they would have gotten where they were going so much faster. Should have been like, all right, I'm gonna give you 5 minutes. I'm gonna tell you why you need to take this serious. And then we're just gonna go. They would have saved so much time. But finally, after they escape from Krylar, they have the whole flashback of Kang. Kang and Janet were buds. They were working together with the promise that, that she would get out.
Well, Kang was, he specifically says he was exiled.
Right.
Which is a key point at the end, in my opinion, why I had a problem with it. So he was exiled and she's, they're working together and he's like helping repair my ship. So now she has a purpose and she's helping him, right?
Right. They've sent him to the Quantum Realm. They've sabotaged his ship so he can't get out.
Right.
And they work on it forever. And she finally helps him get it working. And then the ship is controlled by his brain.
Mind.
Yep. So she's able to see inside of his mind by touching the ship.
Because she's powering it up.
Right.
Yep.
And then she sees that he destroys universes all the time.
And yes. She's like, entire timelines, universes. Yeah. And that terrifies her.
Would it terrify you, though? Like the way it was presented there? It's like he's killing these alternate timelines that may or not be real universes. I'm not sure. I guess maybe.
Well, that's, I think yes, but this is where you're saying you don't know. Like,
I think we'll get to that at the end.
She was living alone for 30 years. Like, I don't even know what's got, like, what terrifies you, like, compared to what you've seen already.
But that's, we'll get to that at the
end. You've survived in a foreign land for decades.
But she's working on the ship, and it seems like out in a cave in the middle of nowhere. But also during that entire time, is this before she hooked up with Krylar? It must be before she hooked up with him. They must have hooked up during the rebellion from when Kang took over. So they fix his ship. She sabotages the core. She shrinks and grows it at the same time with some PIM discs.
Yep.
And then he's mad. She gets away. And then now they're mortal enemies.
And then he conquers the quantum realm or attempts to. She probably goes and hangs out with Bill Murray after that.
Because,
but it's like, you don't know how long she's helping him fix the ship. And it just seems a little odd to me of, so you were helping this person fix his ship because you've been alone forever. Was there zero rapport and companionship between Kang and her? Like, and she just sees a flashback and she's like, I hate you. I thought I knew you. I thought I did.
It seems like it was quick because they did. And especially, I think Kang had, as much as Kang can have a soft spot for somebody, he did for her, in that, like, he was like, no, I'm going to keep my promise to you. Don't worry. I'm not going to mess with your timeline. We're good. You and me, we're buds. We're good. And she's like, no, I'll give it a pass. And maybe she saw some really horrendous things in his mind and in his thoughts that totally changed. But it did seem very Star Wars, like, of like Anakin's turn to the dark side. That happens seemingly in like 5 seconds. It's like, I swear allegiance to you.
Right. Right. What have I done? Well, you cut Mace Windu's hand off. So you're done. But yeah, we have no idea how long she was helping him with the ship. Was it a couple nights? Was it,
it seems 5 years. It seems like it had to be a long, long time.
That's why I have a hard time. It's like, see, you saw this. And he's even like curious. He's like, what did you see? And you don't even know what, like, you find out later. I don't know if she saw his variants or not. Like, that's what we don't know. Was it his thoughts? Actually, his?
Seems like it probably was, but it is. It's a very quick turn. And again, it goes back to like some of the shortcuts I talked about, like, where they don't want to say, like the times where you want her to have a conversation with somebody, she never wants to. It's like, I can't tell you who he is. I can't tell you. Keep going. It's like, what did you see in my mind? I can't tell you that. I'm just going to fight you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But anyway, so sorry to dwell on that. There were a couple of.
No, it's a good point.
Things that I saw. I really wish, not that I'm a movie producer or editor of any kind, but I just think the opening of the movie should have been that cutscene.
Probably instead of the
of her in the quantum realm, him showing up, them walking through that monologue, and then her seeing something. But you're right. It's like they felt a big part of the movie plot needed to be you not knowing who he was, even though you knew who he was.
Right.
And then this big reveal was like, you already knew he was a bad guy, apparently. Yeah. So why is that like a big turning point?
Right.
To me, I didn't understand it. Maybe you can help me. You're kind of in the writing movie business, Joe, but what was the point of having that at that point in the movie?
I feel like it was just a shortcut and it was meant to propel the plot along. If you wanted the bigger, more surprising reveal was MODOK's head in this section, which I had heard rumors it was going to be Darren from the first Ant-Man movie.
Yeah, we talked about that in the last podcast.
But the more shocking things was how his head looked when they had it in the body. And people are telling me that it looked cheap and it looked like not well done. I'm like, no, that's probably what it would look like.
I'm with you. It was that meme of Eitri.
Right.
It's like, MODOK's CGI is terrible. That's what a MODOK is. That's what killing you means.
And then the big surprise is MODOK's tiny little baby bottom.
They censored that, by the way. So if you go watch it, they censored the butt now. So if you go watch the movie, they don't show the curvature of the tushy. They people were offended.
That's by the good. Nudity. I wasn't offended by it. It got me really thinking that I was like, you know what I think now is that MODOK's chair must also be a flying toilet.
You know, it's gotta be horrible.
If he has a digestive system and he's got a little tushy, then I can see him flying around. It's like,
that's right. I wonder if he has a little MODOK bidet in there because he can't wipe.
A MODOK?
A mechanical bidet designed only for cleaning. Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, that takes us through the first half of the movie. Let's take a quick break, recharge our batteries, our quantum batteries or whatever that thing was powering his ship there. And we'll come back and we'll finish up the rest of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We can do this all day.
You say you're back.
All right, everybody. And thanks for sticking with us. We're getting into the second half of our recap of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
Just a real quick, I don't know if this is a side note or what, Joe, but reading all the hater mail on MODOK, he was actually one of my favorite parts of the movie. I'm just going to go on record as saying in the podcast, I actually thoroughly enjoyed the character. I thought if you knew about the character and how to MCU it,
right,
I thought they did a pretty good job with what they did. And everybody is really kind of, I think he had Corey Stoll had to come out and make a statement about it. And I enjoyed MODOK. What did you think?
I mean, we talked about it on the preview for this. MODOK's such a fungible character. You can go a lot of ways with MODOK. You can go scary. You can go silly. You can go all over the board. So I liked it. I don't think MODOK to me has ever worked as anything other than sort of a slightly comedic character, just because the character design is so out there and so bizarre. He's not intimidating to me.
Right. Yes. I think there's some great clips from, I want to say, the X-Men. Is it one of the cartoons where MODOK's in it recently?
X-Men 97.
And they're just like making fun of him. They're like, I'm sorry, you can't be terrifying. You're just so weird looking.
Did we talk about it before? Did you watch the MODOK series on Hulu?
No. You told me about it, but I did not watch it.
Maybe we should check one of those out and talk about it. I watched the first episode or two, and it's comedic because the whole from character design to origin to everything, it's just,
yes.
I mean, MODOK is the character that threw all of the comics. It's like he immediately becomes MODOK, takes over AIM like within 30 seconds. Like they create him, he overthrows the entire thing, takes it over. And then for the next 40 years, AIM is just trying to kill him. Like he's the boss of AIM, but they're continually trying to kill him and overthrow him. Nobody likes MODOK in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not even his
entry. But I liked him in the Ant-Man movie, so I'm going to just go on record and saying that. I enjoyed it.
I did too. So if, back to the film, you know, after the backstory and after the flashback to Kang, now, I mean, Kang does some genuinely terrifying things. I did not realize until my second viewing of the film, I was like, wait, why didn't he take over the quantum realm before? Like, and it I didn't realize that when she fixed his ship, he got his super suit, super technology suit back. And then even though she wrecked the core of the ship, he still had the suit. I don't know what this suit had to do with the ship, whether they powered it up, it generated his suit, and then when it died, the suit stayed. But once he got that suit, he just started conquering, taking over everything. He wants to fix his ship. He's been exiled, and he becomes like a very different Kang than we had seen up to that point in the flashbacks, where he seemed like he was at least had some kind of humanity or compassion in him, and he just doesn't.
Yes, which was a bit confusing to me. Was he lying and womanizing? Like, was he play acting with her?
I felt like up to that point that maybe, you know, if it took them years to fix the core, that he had mellowed out over time. But no, man, he's all about, he's been wrongly exiled. He hates those who've exiled him. He makes that clear. Although, again, now we're going to keep that a mystery of who exiled him to the quantum realm. And he just wants his core back. And he's willing to do whatever it takes. And so he threatens Cassie's life unless Scott pulls one more heist. It's almost like, it's kind of, it's funny, like, to me, that it's like, this is a classic Marvel comic book of like, where did this plot twist come up with? It's like, okay, here's the deal. Darren, who's now MODOK, remembers Scott being a cat burglar, and they're like, well, you know, the only person who could probably sneak in there and get this core out would be a master thief. I'm like, what? Really? Like, Scott has a specialized skill set that no one else is going to be able to get in there. Although maybe they were referring more to the fact that he can shrink and he's got to shrink down to get in there. But
I think it's just fortuitous that he has both.
Okay.
Because we don't know that, because they just kind of mention it, to your point. They just mentioned that MODOK is the one who was the person that pulled him in from the beacon. But I think he's probably like, hey, you know what I could do is I could try to pull in these people, and one of them is probably has a skill set that would help you, because he can't just pull anybody in.
Right. So
I think it's just like a bonus. Like, hey, he has the shrinking technology and he's a thief.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. So they're going to send him down into the core. They take him there. And through this section of the movie, I started to enjoy the interplay with MODOK more, because I think I'm used to Ant-Man being more of the silly movies, Paul Rudd being a really great comedic actor. And that was where the movie started to make sense. He shrinks down and he goes in there. He's like, Darren, can you hear me? Darren. MODOK? He's like, oh, I am here. It's like, he's not responding to the name Darren anymore.
I know.
It's just some of that comedic timing. And then that's another really trippy sequence, right? Where all of a sudden, is. What do they call it? A probability
storm. Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of cool. I wish they would have blew our minds a little more about what that meant, but I liked what they were trying to do there.
I like that one of the versions, because every possible version, every choice he could make splits him off. And then here's, this could have happened, and this could have happened. Like, every choice he could have made along the way. There's one that decides, I'm going to grow a giant. And then he like dies from trying to grow a giant. And then also the Baskin Robin versions of him shows up. I know.
Think of all the probabilities of that happening.
Right. But I get it.
That minuscule, but he was one of a billion, one of a trillion.
It was a really funny moment. It doesn't make sense, though. Because it's supposed to start with the original Ant-Man, and then every choice he could make creates a different one. There's no choice he can make that gets him back to Baskin Robbins and back again.
There is. There's always a chance.
Maybe. There's always a chance. Never say never.
But then he figures out that they can all have a common goal of saving Cassie.
They all do. They are about to, he's about to be buried under different versions of Scott that are all competing. And then their love for their daughter is like, we're going to work together. And then it swells and it's like, but then it's a little let down because that's not what does it. It's like, then they all fall apart. They can't quite make it. And then all of the thousands and thousands of versions of hope come and grab him and they do it together. That was, it's kind of touching. And it's kind of a cool visual when they all, the wasps and all the Ant-Mans meet and then shoo, they all vanish. Yes.
It was kind of neat. I did actually like that.
But then here's another moment where there's a heel turn by Kang that is like out of left field for me. Because Scott's like, here's the deal. I got it for you. Now let Cassie go. And Kang's like, nah, forget it. Like,
right.
For no reason at all. None whatsoever. And like, literally, he had just come off of, we saw the flashback where Janet had helped him rebuild his ship. He's like, don't worry, I'm not going to destroy your timeline. A deal's a deal. He literally told her, we had a deal. And now Scott's like, we had a deal. He's like, nah, whatever. Don't care. Like,
yeah, it's that to me was extremely lazy writing because they had to do that to create the third act.
Right.
And I'm like, but that doesn't. So that's what I was telling you before, and we'll get to it at the end, is I didn't know what this version of Kang was about. Right. I don't know what his character is. Like, I don't know what his principles are. Like, I don't get it.
Well, I mean, there's not really, as I look at my notes, there's not a ton of movie plot left to cover. It's what you expect. Big battles, big battles. We're going to save Cassie. And there's really like...
There's the resistance, the rebels coming. There's a big third act sequence.
It's very Star Wars-ish where there's like, here's them trying to make the prison escape over here and get Cassie out. Here's the rebels organizing to fight. And here's Scott trying to stop Kang from taking off. There were some cool moments throughout that whole thing, though.
Yes.
So what were some of your favorite moments in there in those final battles?
Well, it was definitely, I mean, there were a lot, but I think the touching one was when the Rebels, the guy with one of the cooler guys, he dies.
Yeah.
But I think Giant Man, I think, really got Kang worried for a bit there. So like when Ant-Man grew and used his own technology against him as a shield and was trying to get in there. And then Cassie grew big. Stinger,
you're
aka
huge.
Stinger.
I feel like I'm hugging Godzilla.
Right. But those are my favorite when they were large and they were taking people out.
That was very cool because they did some interesting things. And then, like you said, Scott rips off the top of that building that's circle shaped and starts using like a shield. I'm like, just like Captain America taught you, is that but then they finally do stop Kang's time machine through their own version of a fastball special where she takes him when he's tiny and throws him and he grows really huge and like he cannonballs that thing and destroys that. I thought that was pretty clever use of the shrinking and growing technology. And then just everything with MODOK in that section worked for me.
Yes. Yep. It really did.
The touching speech that Cassie gives him of Darren, why are you why are you this way? It's like,
yeah,
I don't know any other way to be.
Tell me what to be. He's like, tell me what to be. It's never too late to not be a dick. It's a great one-liner.
Right. And it's in like MODOK comes in and helps them stop Kang. At the very end, he's like, she inspired him.
And it kills him.
The MODOK death scene was pretty inspiring. At least I died an Avenger.
Right. I loved it. That was so fun.
Yep, you're in.
Yep. That's why I like the whole MODOK story in that. It was a perfect story arc for MODOK.
MODOK's not going to work in a Winter Soldier Captain America type movie.
No, it's not. Definitely not.
It's going to have to be quirky, goofy movie like this.
Yeah.
So yeah. I thought actually that was like one of the better character arcs in the movie. And it was,
I know,
it was really good comic relief at times when I think we needed it, because Kang's villain story was just relentlessly oppressive. He just became like cartoon villainish.
Yeah.
Like, like, for no reason, I'm not going to live up to my deals. I'm going to betray everybody. I'm going to destroy everything. I get it. That's sort of who Kang is. I think they got there pretty quick without giving you, at least with Thanos, you got a little bit of sympathy for what he was trying to accomplish. And I don't think that they've done that yet. And I, you know, as we wrap up the movie, we'll start talking about some of the themes. So let's just quickly, like, you know, of course the good guys win. They destroy the power core. Kang gets sucked into another dimension or whatever. You know, the big final.
Yeah, we don't know if he's dead or he just got sucked into some weird vortex or something. Yeah.
Right. Hope comes back, saves Scott at the end when it's just him and her. And then the portal closes behind them. Now they're stuck in the quantum realm forever. Except.
But wait, there's more. You left out, and maybe that's intentional, the whole ants saving the day.
Oh, yeah. The ants, too. There's a lot of different.
They were at a different place in the quantum realm where they were evolving over thousands of years, and they became this advanced ant system with advanced technology to help save everybody.
Their own form of government. Sometimes socialism has a negative connotation, but
that to me was a little too much. They didn't have to do that. I get why, because it's called Ant-Man movie. They're like, well, let's have the ants save the day.
Yeah, it got to be that piling on, almost like when we watched the like Lord of the Rings, where it's like there's like five endings. Like, okay, now Kang's defeated. Okay, now Kang's defeated. Okay, now he's really defeated. The ants are like, first he was defeated. MODOK crashes. Like, the ants come in. Okay, now he's defeated. Oh, now they need MODOK's help. Okay, now he's defeated. Okay, now right. he's
now there's back. A hand-to-hand fist fight between Scott and Kang.
Right.
Okay, now he's defeated. It was. I'm like, and to your point, we almost just skipped over the ant part. And apparently the movie wanted that to be a big part of it.
Right. But it didn't.
And it just didn't make any sense to me, that part of it. I was just like, I understand why they did it. I just didn't agree with it.
Right. So the movie wraps.
Sorry to bring you back, but
okay.
Wrap it up. So you wrap it up.
I'm
so
glad you brought me back to it, because I forgot about the ants altogether.
Yeah.
That's how much of an impression they made. It's just
that final. You saw it twice.
There's a lot going on in that. There's a lot of different fights going on. It's almost like I used to think of Star Wars, the first Star Wars movie. Like there's one thing going on. It's them attacking the Death Star. And it cuts back and forth between the Death Star and the Rebel base. It's about to get blown up. Then in Empire, there's like the thing on Cloud City and something else going on at the same time. And then in Return of the Jedi, it's now like the Ewok thing and the Death Star. And like they keep adding stuff to this. This felt very much like that. Like there's five different things going on that you're trying to keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
So
they go back to the regular world.
Get to the regular world. And Scott's like, yeah, we did it. We beat him. Or did we?
Or did I do something terrible? Did I do the wrong thing? Oh, well, I don't know.
Right.
Welcome back, Mr. Carter. Welcome back.
And it lets you end on a little bit of a light note there, too.
It's right.
Like, it's like, oh, you're the other bug man. You're the bug man. It's like the one that grows big and small. $12 for your coffee. It's not Spider-Man. So ends good. There. Post-credit scene, well, mid-credit scene is the Council of Kangs.
Yep.
That is where we were talking about. It's like, I don't know which Kang is which. These ones all exiled Kang. Was he a good guy? Scott wonders. So he's like, he told me if I defeated him, there were more of him out there that were worse. Did I just do the wrong thing by defeating him? And I think this is, what's a little disappointing is this is the second time now in a row that they've pulled this in Marvel. End of Loki was the exact same. And you're just still left wondering, if all this Kang was trying to do was stop all of these incursions, which according to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is one of the worst things that could ever happen is these incursions. And he's trying to destroy timelines to stop these incursions from happening. Is he the good guy? Is he not? And if every other Kang exiled him, is it because they want these incursions to happen? Because I felt like where it was going was all of, well, because we talked about it in the Marvel comics, all of the Kangs are trying to represent my timeline is the only one that can exist. But it seems like there's thousands of Kangs in a football stadium all together being like, yes, Kang, Kang, we're going to rule.
I couldn't agree more. I was very disappointed at the end because I didn't. Maybe they'll explain it in subsequent movies. And there's a movie called The Kang Dynasty. But this character in Quantum, this Kang in Quantumania, we just didn't know what he was about. Like, what were his principles?
Right.
Because you think later, well, wait, so he was in exile. So was he a good guy? But he was doing bad things in the quantum world. In Quantumania, he was conquering, right. He was killing, he was reneging on deals. So I'm with you. I'm unlike the one in Loki. He wasn't, to our knowledge, he wasn't doing anything wrong other than he wronged Sylvie because he pruned her timeline.
Right.
And so it's just the gray area to me is way worse than in Thanos. Like Thanos wanted to destroy half of life. It's like, right. Okay, that's a pretty clear, but this is like, are they intentionally trying to question your moral authority by saying, do they want you and I arguing about is Kang in Quantumania a good or bad guy?
Maybe.
I'm like, if you do want us to do that, you're doing a terrible job of explaining it in the movie because I don't know what you want me to think.
Right. I mean, I guess you could look at it this way. Is if you wanted to have a debate at this point, it would be the two versions of Kang we've come to know the most, which is this one and the He Who Remains from the Loki series, which, although, like you said, Sylvie had a grudge against him for what, killing her mother?
Yep.
He was, well, more of a...
taking her life away from her, pruning her whole timeline, so killing her whole life, basically.
But it seems like he was more of trying to be a surgeon rather, yes, than just a mass destroyer and conqueror, and he didn't really... wasn't motivated by wanting to run things, like being in charge, because right. He tried to give over control of being in charge to Loki and Sylvie. Being like, you guys,
yep,
manage this. I'm tired of it. Versus somebody who's just wholesale, I'll go into the middle of a timeline and just destroy everybody in the timeline rather than trying to be more precise in pruning these things.
Yeah. But then I don't understand the stakes of the movie then. It's like,
I don't either.
What? So that's where I was disappointed in that. And maybe it's a rewatchable thing. Maybe it's like, all right, so we're supposed to watch 5 more years of movies and then come back and be like, oh, this makes more sense now. It just right. doesn't seem like that doesn't work. So I don't know if they're just trying too hard. It is the 31st movie. It's like, we've got to go in different directions, I guess. I don't know, but
yeah. And that brings us to like the last post-credit scene where it is our good friends Loki and Mobius.
Yes, Victor Timely.
Victor Timely, who is an inventor. And then it's like, literally, it's like, that is the smash cut. Loki season 2, you know, coming soon. But ultimately, after 2 hours of watching Ant-Man, I'm more excited to see Loki than I was to see Ant-Man.
I know.
Because I think it's going to be more of a personal, you'll get to learn about Kang and his motivations in a deeper, more reflective way than trying to smash it into a 2-hour action movie.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately that's where I come down on this. You know, normally you and I talk about where do these movies rank in terms of Marvel movies. Is mm-hmm. I don't know if I went back and ranked this where I'd rank it, but what I would say is I feel more fulfilled as a Marvel fan and as a, you know, a lifelong even comic reader from the TV output over the last 2 years than the last couple of movies.
Yep.
I'm more excited for Loki and season 2 than for Marvel.
I agree. I put it, I can't remember if we had 4 tiers.
Yep.
It's like it is right on. I think it's the bottom of the 3rd tier. This one,
yeah,
is right, because it's better. It's better than Thor: Love and Thunder,
right?
But I don't think it's better than Wakanda Forever or Multiverse of Madness. And it's about Shang-Chi level, is kind of what I would.
Yeah, put it at. That's a good spot. I probably put it a little bit behind Shang-Chi.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Just because it's also the third movie in a series, and it didn't. It's not what I want from an Ant-Man movie necessarily, but
yeah,
that is what it is. I think Shang-Chi had more new ideas and more new characters and more new thoughts that explored in different ways. Mm-hmm. And showed me things I hadn't seen before that I would watch. If you gave me the choice a year from now to say, you're going to sit down and watch one of those two movies and I'm going to pick Shang-Chi.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
But I don't think it's as bad as everybody's been making it out to be. But
I agree with that too. That's why it kind of irritates me, because I'm like, it's not that bad.
No.
But people are expecting everything to be Endgame.
Right. Like, it took them a long time to get to Endgame. And I feel like that's where I hope Kevin Feige is saying we're going to slow down our output a little bit. Is just, it feels like they're trying to cram too much story into too short of a period of time. It's like, take your time telling the story. It took a long time to build the Endgame.
Yeah. Yeah. And we still aren't, I mean, even with the end scene, we're like, all right, so there's these three Kangs that are going to be bad. But then it almost, to me, that's why the movie is just, it's like invalidated that Kang.
Right.
There's more bad Kangs coming. So what did I just watch?
Yeah. What did I see?
What did I just see? But yeah, 6.5 or 7 out of 10 is kind of what I would give it.
Yeah. Somewhere in that range. That sounds about right. Yeah. So we'll take a break. And when we come back, we will talk briefly about some Ant-Man comics we saw and then talk about what's coming soon. We will be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. What a revolting development that is.
Thanks for sticking with us through our Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania recap. Finished talking about the movie, and now we're going to talk about Ant-Man, the limited comic series. There are 5 issues of this published in 2022, starting in July. So it's a real recent comic, Mark, and I sent it to you on the Marvel Unlimited app. I don't know if you're familiar with the creative team. It was written by Al Ewing with art by Tom Riley. Do you know anything about Al Ewing?
I don't know much about him. I don't want to be that guy. You're not that guy, Bill. You're not that guy. But I think it was 4 comics, not 5.
Was it? It's only 4?
Yeah.
I'm going to look.
I got like, my you're going to have to fact check me. But
Issue 1, 2, 3, 4, you are right, 4.
Yes. Okay, 4. But yeah, no, but I'm not familiar with them. And we'll get to the artist later in our chat about this series. But yes, I'm not familiar with them. Are you?
I am familiar with Al Ewing because Al Ewing's he's a fascinating writer. And where I got familiar with him was he was writing Immortal Hulk, which if you haven't read Immortal Hulk, he put a whole new fresh twist on Hulk. It's like the hottest Hulk comic that was for a while because it became more of a horror comic book going back to Hulk's early origins where he only came out at night. Instead of it being Bruce Banner getting angry, it was triggered by nighttime, and it became much more of a horror comic to where Bruce Banner could die, but Hulk couldn't. And there was something going on with that where like Hulk would die, but it would continually come back. And it's really creepy. That's where I got exposed to Al Ewing for the first time, but I'm going to give you the solicit for the first comic, because this will launch us into discussing the full title. Flashback to the early days of Hank Pym's career as the astonishing Ant-Man. It's date night for Hank and his girlfriend Janet Van Dyne, but nobody told that to Ant-Man's enemies. Watch as Hank's antagonists band together to finally take down the scientific adventurer. But will anyone come to his rescue? And who is the mysterious stranger who stalks him? Join Al Ewing and Tom Riley as they explore the history of every hero, past, present, and future, called Ant-Man.
Ant-Man.
So, I mean, you know, it is what it says. I liked the series because it, first off, it's a tight series. You don't have to know a ton of continuity about Ant-Man if you don't want to enjoy the comic, but it's 4 issues, each centered around a different Ant-Man.
Yes.
And I thought we were going to rush through it. Like at the break, I was like, hey, Mark, we can just like blast through this last segment. You were like, hey, but I kind of like this book.
I really like this book. I very much enjoyed it. And so, yeah, I asked you, could we do like a separate segment on it? So thank you for that.
Yeah. So what was it that, you're not like a month to month comic book reader, right?
That is correct.
And so getting this series, like what was it that drew you to this particular depiction of Ant-Man?
I would say, well, A, I think you do a good job of sending me things that you think I may enjoy, and it usually ranges from mildly enjoying. And I never don't like it, I guess is what I'm saying. So thank you for that.
There was something. There was something, I feel like.
I think there was one, but you warned me of it. You're like, I don't know. And so you told me the premise of this one a while back. Then you said, let's read it. And I got to say, it pulled me in from the storytelling style right at the beginning of being in the distant future and then going back to the past and then the contrasting art styles. And I'm like, I'm going to really like this. I just like it when people take chances on storytelling styles and also complement it with the inking and the artistry that they did in the books.
Yeah. It's interesting because it kicks off very different. And so I was used to Al Ewing being a writer who takes a lot of risks, but it kicks off in the far future, 99 AU/2549 AD.
Right. And
it just starts off with this little word bubble, Marvel, MRVL trademark, Marvel narrative experience trademark, adjusted for period. Reader instructions follow. Please obey all instructions for complete Marvel TM narrative experience, TM.
Yeah. Breaking the fourth wall without breaking the fourth wall in the actual storytelling.
Yeah.
And honestly, Joe, the first issue, like when I pulled it up on Marvel Unlimited app, seeing the retro helmet in the modern art style is what that immediately pulled me. And then of course the first two pages pulled me in even further.
Yeah. So this is a celebration of 60 years of Ant-Man. He was celebrating his 60-year anniversary last year. And you're right. It starts off in the far future. And it's got like this little robotic narrator that's narrating, telling you how to enjoy a Marvel narrative experience.
Prepare yourself.
With a character who we don't know who he is, but he's studying ants. And it is very cool because he hops in this transport that's very much, it starts asking questions like, who is Ant-Man? What is Ant-Man? Why is Ant-Man? When is Ant-Man? And he pops out, and all of a sudden the art style like really resembles an old comic strip from the 1960s.
Right. Like is that Silver Age or Golden Age? I think it's Silver Age, but
Silver Age. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was a person called the Protector in that. And there was essentially a, what I called an Ant-Man Sinister Six, but only four of them. Trying to kidnap, right?
Right.
Kidnap, destroy. It was hard to, but that was the point. It was hard to really understand what they wanted out of Hank Pym.
They were kind of generic Silver Age bad guys that each had their own like little theme, that one played the trumpet and one was an old guy who was trying to age people so that they would be old like him.
And then there was the window washer.
I don't think these are real old Marvel characters. I think they're invented for this. Maybe.
I was wondering that too. I think they were invented too. I don't recall them, but we'll have to fact check that later.
But yeah, the fiendish force that is after Ant-Man. And it is kind of kitschy, kind of cute. Hank and Janet start off on a date and they're saying Submariner versus Fantastic Four, which is supposedly a documentary from real footage. Captured, I liked it. And an annoying kid in the back, Eric O'Grady. Did you know anything about Eric O'Grady before?
I did not. Did you?
I did, because I actually knew Irredeemable Ant-Man. He was the Irredeemable Ant-Man. It was the name of his comic series. So the first issue does focus on Hank. Any thoughts on that one? Because it is very much of its era.
Well, other than I think one thing I made in my notes, again, other than liking the style of the throwback and the story, again, it really not only the style of the art encapsulated, but the whole story. Like you said, the kooky window washer, the four bad guys were kind of hokey. Like it made you feel very nostalgic. That's how comics were written, these fantastical, weird weapons and stuff. And And then Wasp goes to save Hank Pym.
Yeah.
And then runs into the burglar Scott Lang. I thought that was an interesting crossover there, right? So that was kind of cool how they brought Scott Lang into it, even in this first comic.
What do they call him? A second story man?
So yeah,
calls him something like out of out of that era. Like, yeah, he's a cat burglar. And so yeah, they introduce the other two Ant-Mans you're gonna meet later, right in this one.
In that one. And it's just a very original way with O'Grady and Lang. And so that pretty much wrapped that up, right, Joe? Was like, you still don't know what's going on, but it pulled you in enough to really want to go to the next comic.
Yeah, this book really hooked me with the, I'm just going to real quick touch on this before we move on to the next book. It was that scene with the Wasp where Ant-Man has been captured by his arch nemesis and he sends the ants to go get help, except the ants spell out H-L-E-P to Janet. And she figures, oh, I know what they mean. They're the ants. They're not great spellers.
Right. And then, but what it was is he was trying to send it across, like, wasn't he? He was weakened, or
playing the trumpet on him that was hypnotizing him.
Yes.
But it is, it's that era where I liked it, where they're not worried about whatever. She shrinks down and you see her fly out in her old costume, but her dress and her shoes are like left behind because she shrank right out of them. And then she goes, and it's just like adorable when she runs into Scott and she's like, he's broken into the house she needs to get into accidentally. And she's like, you know, hey, you know, your crime might have saved a man's life, so you'll get a kiss from me. And she's like, she's little tiny. And she like just gives her a little kiss on the nose and there's a little heart.
I know. It was so indicative of that era. Just the goofy villains and the weird things like that, like shrinking down and leaving her clothes in like, you know, in those TikTok videos when people take clothes and they go out to the freezing cold air outside. They're like, they were made whole. I'm like, but they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't stay starched.
Right. Then issue two switches to focus on the Eric O'Grady, the irredeemable Ant-Man. And it's narrated by, instead of this mechanical being, it's narrated by an ant, which I like.
Yes.
It just kicks right off. And be like, remember how an ant used to do recaps an irredeemable ant? That was my distant ancestor. Ancestor.
Yes. Yes. But and I love the background of Eric O'Grady. He's an ex-SHIELD analyst.
Right. He was just an analyst. He was just some schlub who worked on the office who was tired of everybody else getting like kudos. And so he just like swipes the Ant-Man suit at one point.
Right. He's just some regular Joe Schmo.
He's like not a good guy, as you saw in the first comic where he's like irritating and throwing popcorn at people in the theater. Now he's grown up and he's just kind of a jerk. And that was his gig. Yes. I clearly remember when I picked up the first irredeemable Ant-Man, I was like, who is this guy? And he had swiped the Ant-Man thing and he was using it to go into the ladies' SHIELD locker room to peep on women in the shower. I was like, that doesn't fly, dude.
Yeah.
it was like that's the kind of, this guy is not a hero at all, but he gets the suit and at some point straightens out his act, because even though he's trying to do selfish stuff, he winds up getting himself into situations where he has to be the good guy.
Right Kind of a almost an anti-hero. And then the other B story on this is Hank Pym, they reveal, is really a Skrull prepping for some secret invasion. And he's wondering if this Eric O'Grady is, maybe there's more to him than we know. No, there's less.
There's less. Well, you remember that era. Eric
O'Grady is this like mastermind pulling strings. And he has to figure out what he's about, what Eric O'Grady is about, what he's doing. And then Eric O'Grady learns that through the suit that he has, that he has to get Pym particles. And this is where it gets really fun.
Yeah, the suit's not working anymore because he's all out of Pym particles.
Yes. And he figures that out accidentally because he didn't realize the suit has a Hey Siri or Hey Google option.
Right. So it's
oops, the plot. I just activated Siri on all my Apple devices.
Oh, Siri, we weren't really talking to you this time. But it is. It's a fun comic in that Eric O'Grady doesn't know anything. He's just a dummy. So you wind up in this issue with a an incompetent Skrull who's disguised as Hank Pym.
That's right.
Who's paranoid that this other incompetent Ant-Man dude is onto him and has swiped the Ant-Man uniform because he knows it's embedded with Skrull technology. And the two of them just kind of out incompetenting each other for a long time.
Yes.
Which I think captures so that era of Irredeemable Ant-Man very well.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and not even reading it now, I kind of want to go read it because it was very fun and just in just this one comic. And so then he realizes, Eric Greedy realizes that he has to find the Pym particles. He thinks it's going to be in Scott Lang's corpse. So he's got to go loot Scott Lang's corpse for the Pym particles.
He thinks Scott might have been buried in the Ant-Man costume.
Right.
Which would then contain Pym particles.
And they're like, wait a minute, are you trying to loot his corpse? And I think that's when that Hank Pym Skrull realizes this guy's just a moron. And he's like you said, irredeemable. But then he meets the future Pym and gains crucial knowledge of the future about the episode or about the show Lost.
Right. But all he wants to know about the future is like
future episodes of Lost.
Right.
Which was hilarious.
So issue 3 pops up and now you've got Scott Lang as the hero in this one, because again, after Secret Invasion, so many people came back to life. And it's Scott and Cassie's turn in the spotlight. And this character I'd never known before, the Electric Ant.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. First of all, and I'll have to maybe pull up the book real quick. I had my notes. Was Eric O'Grady a robot in book 3?
I don't think it was Eric O'Grady. I just think it was a robot that was built called the Electric Ant.
Okay. So it wasn't. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. He says he's the second Eric O'Grady, the Electric Ant, what father built me to be. So he's a robot. And he says, I was created to replace Eric O'Grady, who was like super dead.
Yes.
So I think he was created to be a robot duplicate to trick people into thinking he was Eric O'Grady.
That's what I
thought. O'Grady was dead.
Yes. Yeah. So we're in modern day New York City. This is the storyline that a few of the listeners might know, like Ultron merged with Pym. So it kind of brings in that storyline of Ultron actually merging with Pym, because Pym is kind of one of the forefathers of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get introduced, like you said, to Cassie Lang, which is it my ignorance? Is that her? In the Quantumania, they didn't call her Stinger, did they? Because they do in this book.
No.
Okay. So Stinger is that a new term for her? Or was she always that?
I think they call her that in the comics.
Okay. Stinger. Okay. Got it. And then Ultron uses ant telepathy.
Because he's connected to Hank Pym. Hank Pym have merged. And they've got to
communicate trapped with Scott. And then Black Ant threatens him.
Right.
It's good.
So the Black Ant is coming to try and unleash Ultron / Hank hybrid, while Scott is trying to take it and send it to an alternate dimension or somewhere where even if Ultron escapes from this thing, he won't be in any danger. And there's to me, the best moment in the comic is where they're fighting and there's Buck and he's like, I'm calling backup. And he's like, just try it, jerk. I bribed the ants around here with some serious sugar. And then you see a web shoot in and you're like, yes. Oh man, Spider-Man's here. And it's not, it's just real actual spiders.
It was really good. And it started to, then you understood what was at stake here in this one. It builds up to kind of this kind of between second and third act, which is there was a temporal displacement with vibranium and Asgardian magic tomb, and then it creates this the big baddie, which is the All-Father Ant-Man.
All-Father Ultron.
All-Father Ultron.
Right.
That's right. Thank you. All-Father Ultron.
Yeah. And then we get to the that's the climax, is that all of these Ant-Man from all these Ant-Men from around, from all the different eras, have to now come together to defeat All-Father Ultron.
And that was at the very first book. That's why they said that was the future starting point, right? Was he realized that the future Ant-Man realized that's what he needed to do.
Right. And I love the way the last book starts too. It's just the info dump again. Marvel TM, deep background info dump TM. And you can tell it is like a recap they would do of a Marvel book, where like, then this happened. They would like refer to what comics, you can tell they're actual comics that did not exist. They're just making them up.
Yes.
Because it's the future. From New Avengers, Ultron Forever, number one. Uncanny Avengers, Ultron Avengers, number one. Human Ant-Man, or All Human Ant-Man Origins, number one. It's like,
it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So then you realize that there's another Ant-Man, Zane Ashgar, right?
Mm-hmm. He's the Ant-Man from the future that is the new character that was created for this book, I believe.
New character, I think it was. And then he's got the nano ant swarm with some really cool future ant powers.
Yeah.
Very neat. Really, really well done.
Yeah. So, well, I don't want to spoil the
three. Oh, you want to spoil the ending. Okay. They have to fight the All-Father together, right? So that's
that. Yeah. So it's a really fun book. It builds up to, you know, I'm hoping that we've inspired maybe at least one or two people to read it. It's on the Marvel Unlimited app. You can easily find it, I'm sure. Any place where you can download books or comics. I thought it was fun. I'm glad
it was really well done. It's up there, Joe, with all the ones we reviewed. And because I never felt confused, like what's going on, even though you should be confused, but I wasn't, if that makes sense.
Ooh, yikes.
Which is good storytelling. Microphone. You okay?
I'm banging on my microphone by accident.
But I think that's what good storytelling is like you never find yourself feeling really confused.
Right.
Or overly monologued or anything like that. It just flowed really nicely. I think I read all four in one sitting.
Yeah, it's an easy read.
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. Well, that's it for Ant-Man 2022 series from Al Ewing. So two big thumbs up on that one.
Yes, definitely.
From us. I did start because they teased it there that there is a Wasp series that just started. I read the first issue. It's not flowing as easily. I'm gonna keep with it. I thought it would be very similar, like different Wasps through the ages, but they really can't do that because there's only ever really been one Wasp. It's just always been Janet Van Dyne. So I'm interested to see where they go with the story, but it wasn't as immediately engaging sort of as this one was, even though it's the same creative team, I think.
Nice. Yeah, well.
All right, Mark. Well, we will take one last break and then we will be right back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. You know the rules. We're not done until one of us can't get up.
All right. Good. Well, that wraps up our Ant-Man special. Did we talk about where you'd rank this in terms of
the series? Ant-Man
movies? Yeah. Or in total.
Or the movie itself? No, I don't think we did. We had four tiers, I think.
Yeah.
I would put it somewhere up towards the top of the third tier.
Yeah. So what movie are you
where I would put it?
I think we did already talk about this because I said I put it right near Shang-Chi.
Yeah, Shang-Chi, yeah. Yeah.
Shang-Chi.
Yeah. Shang-Chi, yeah.
That's a long 20 minutes there spent talking about Ant-Man. I couldn't even remember what we talked about just earlier tonight.
That's right.
All right, so that's it for our Ant-Man podcast. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and we will be back to talk to you soon. Cheers.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter @CasualComicsGuy, at our blog CasualComicsGuy.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.